Yeah, there we go.
All right, I'm joined today by James Townsend, Team Juggernaut, weightlifter, super tuttle king, all of the superlatives that we could give. But today we're here to talk about something much more significant than how to lift weights. We got a lot of stuff going on in the world, and I have not the perspective I think that people need to hear. So that's why I wanted to talk to you, buddy. How are you doing today?
Doing good, man. Just trying to keep my head above water and trying not to get all, angry and everything, which is hard, but doing better, man. Doing better. How you doing?
Not too bad. It's just been there were protests and stuff going on, and even in Costa Mesa last night, we're on the curfews and stuff here, and just kind of watching the news. And while sometimes, living in the bubble that is Orange County, these things can feel like they're, a world away. But I know that that my friends are struggling with this, and talking to Marissa about conversations she's having to have with her kids and her son particularly. And we were talking on Saturday, I think, that so many of these experiences for me are experiences I see on the news or that I read about, I hear about, but that I've never had a tough interaction with police. And then she was telling me about some her ex-husband having the police dog sicked on him and getting hit with the baton and being pulled over at gunpoint with their son in the car when he was 8 or 9 years old. And that's so many people's reality, and that's something I want to be sensitive to and share about for people maybe who they haven't had that as their own experience. But I know that has certainly been a part of your life experience. So there's stories that that you could share with me. I would love to hear personal experiences of interactions you've had with police.
Yeah, it's it's one of them things to where me personally, and I'm pretty sure my generation, growing up in a Black community and in a Black household, we always hear about the stories that our parents and our grandparents and the generations before them have gone through. And you take them on as stories, right? Because it's not happening as you're growing up, even though we were alive during the riots in LA, but I was only 7 years old, so it didn't click then. But that became like a story, seeing it on the TV and the news. We see it as, and we treat it as like, oh, all right, that's the news. It's not a part of my reality yet, but it struck me to where I'm like, wow, like now I'm actually, I actually have to go through, and I'm doing what, my parents or my grandparents or my great grandparents have done, during their time. And for me, I just never thought that I would have to go through that, and being a kid from the South Bronx, 168th Webster Projects, very rundown area. No money, no education in that area. Moving out to the suburbs in South Jersey into another project, another rundown area to where there's constant interaction with the police. So for example, it could be like, we could be, let's say we're working out in your garage, right? We're just hanging out, talking or whatever. Cop roll around in your apartment complex and then happen to stop, and then get out of the car and make up an excuse or a lie and say like, oh, we got a call for disturbance. Let me see your ID. And then, if I'm a citizen here in the U.S., I have rights. Right. And then by a young Black male or any Black male going ahead and exercising that rights, we are the angry one. We are the bad one. We're resisting arrest. So we don't know if they have gotten a call from us just hanging out in the garage or just hanging out in front of our you know, apartment complex, which that's what we do most of the time. You know, we get with our friends and, you know, we talk about basketball, football. We talk, you know, we talk about stuff that's going on. But cops just happen to always roll around through the neighborhood and just mess with us for no reason. You know, it's like a big bully. You know, it's no different than being with a bully at school, getting bullied. You know, in our neighborhood, we always feel like the cops are the biggest bullies and, you know, we get bullied.
Yeah, so one of the things I was saying to Marissa is, like, whenever I've gotten pulled over in my life, you know, which is only a handful of times, my thought is, like, I'm going to be as friendly as possible with the police officer because, you know, I figure that can only help. It's definitely not going to hurt. It can only help. But I think that's an easy thing to do for me when it's like, well, I get, you know, pulled over once every couple of years when I knew I did something wrong. Yeah. You know, for the most part. But, you know, if it's you're getting pulled over, you know, every week or every month or multiple times a week, as she had described with her ex-husband, you know, it's going to change. Like, you're on edge right away. You know, like, you kind of sum up a little bit of what that feels like to like enter into a situation knowing
it's nerve-wracking, man. It's for you to know that you have no criminal record. Like me, I have no criminal record. I don't smoke, never did drugs, you know, drink occasionally, whatever, but clean driving record. But for you to know that you have all that and that you're clean and everything and that you haven't done anything wrong, but to get pulled over, it's like your heart just raced through the roof, you know, and it becomes one of them things where you're like, all right, you know, hands on the steering wheel or hands up or hands out the window and everything. But then also, you know, as the cop pull up, you're nervous, so you're talking nervous, and then that implies him to go ahead and be like, hey man, why are you nervous, you know? And then they ask you to step out of the car. Like, for example, when we first moved here, we went to a wedding to Kansas City. Driving back, you know, I had my 2017 Tahoe that had 20 inch rims and 20 inch tires, you know, and you know, they were all black or whatever, and I still had my California license plate at the time. So being that we were only a month in living into Iowa, you know, the DMV gave me 60 days to go ahead and change it, right? To change my license and also change my license plate. So as I'm driving, I see the cop car, and this is normal for us. Whenever we see a cop car just hanging out either on the road when you're driving or in the median, you're constantly looking in the side view mirror. Looking in your, you know, your rear view mirror, right? And then he comes out and I'm like, oh, all right. You know, I'm sitting up and everything, but I'm constantly looking to make sure, like, no, I didn't do anything wrong. So he tells me for 10 minutes, you know, and I'm like, and I'm just saying to myself, like, all right, no, I know I didn't do wrong. This is my car. It's in my name. My license plate is clean. So whenever you run tags, you know, that all that stuff should come up. So I'm in front of a car is in front of me and then a truck. So the car moves and I'm behind the truck. The cop is behind me. Then I move into the passing lane to pass the truck. And then he gets behind me. And then I get over to pass the truck. And then he turns on his lights. And so he said, you know, as he pulled me over, he says that I was tailing the truck. Knowing that he was telling me for 10. Yeah. Knowing that he was telling me for 10 minutes. Yeah. And then, you know, he asked me for my license. You know, Amy had woke up. The kids were in the back. He asked me for my license. I gave him a license, registration, and insurance. And then he asked me to step out of the car. And I'm like, I turned to look at my wife, and she's like, what? And mind you, there's a car. There's a cop on her side looking in through the back window to see, you know, who's in the back or whatever, because my windows are dark. But he has his hand. He has his hand on the gun. So she looks at me, and I'm like, why do I need to get out of the car? And he's like, just get out of the car, please. And I get out, and then he tells me to come to the back, and then to sit in his passenger seat. All right, so I'm scared, you know, my kids are crying, Amy's crying. So I'm sitting in there and he was like, oh, where y'all coming from? I was like, coming from a wedding, we just moved here. And then he was like, how long ago did y'all move here? I was like, all right, we moved out July 18th. And around this time it was in August. So he's like, okay, so what made you go to the wedding? And I was like, you know, somebody that used to go to my gym that I owned in California invited me out to go to the wedding. So we're just going to a wedding. He's like, okay. So he gives my place number, and he's running it, right? But he's also radioing it in. The person came back and said, the tags is good. You know, they're from California. James Townsend and Amy Townsend's name are on the thing. You know, his license is good. No warrants, nothing. So I'm sitting there and he's like, oh, okay. And then he gives me my driver's license and he was like, make sure your kids are tied up in the back seat, in a car seat. I'm like, yeah, he threw that jab at me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was like, and I just got out of the car and just walking to the car and just driving back home, I'm just shaking. Like, you know, but not only am I shaking, I'm just thinking about like, why did he have to throw that jab out there? You know, why did he have to pull me over in the first place? Is it because I had a nice car? You know, is it because my tags were out of place? He tailed me for 10 minutes. You know, even when the car that was in front of me and the truck, he could have pulled me over then. You know, so it's stuff like that to where it's either we're driving a nice car, we're in the wrong neighborhood, you know, we're hanging out in front of our house or whatever, or we're walking down the street. It's a whole bunch of things that get you involved with the cops for just being Black.
You know, so as I look at, you know, your life from the projects of the South Bronx to, you know, Moore Park, Thousand Oaks area, California to Iowa, you know, that's about three as different of places that one person could live. But, you know, do you see big differences in your experience as a Black man in the South Bronx versus, you know, pretty affluent area of Southern California versus kind of rural Iowa?
Oh yeah, there's no, I don't, you know, even when we lived in downtown LA for 5 years, you know, we lived two blocks away from Skid Row. There was constant cops, constant cops, you know? So in my psyche, that's the norm. I'm used to it, you know, coming from South Bronx to South Jersey to California, you know, just seeing the cops, that's normal. And I guess in LA, they have to be out there because of, you know, all the homeless people being around and everything. Yeah. I get that. Yeah. But moving out to Moore Park, now that was different because I didn't see as much cops. You know, there was no need for a cop. If I saw a cop, it was that one cop throughout that whole town.
Yeah.
You know, and just the variety of cops out into a very predominantly white neighborhood, there's no need for them to be there, you know? That's going through their minds. There's no need for me to be here because this, you know, no crime is going to happen here. I need to be patrolling down into, you know, South Central or the South Bronx or Compton and everything where crime is happening.
And now where you're at in Iowa, like, you're like the only Black guy that lives in all of Iowa, or what's up, bro?
I'm the second. There's two Black guys in my gym, me and another guy.
Mm-hmm.
Two. You know, and just even with all this is going on, you know, it's not that I'm looking at them differently because I never will. Like, even dealing with all the racism in my life, nothing, even though all that hatred was at me, nothing could allow me to hate white people. Nothing, you know, nothing. But I'm aware of it. You know, I'm educated on it, but nothing would allow my heart to hate anybody. Even when a priest told me and my wife he would not marry her because I'm Black, to my face, you know, sitting across each other.
Yeah.
You know, like stuff like that. So, but being here in Iowa, I find it that my white friends are more concerned about me being here than I am concerned about being there. you know, they talk to my wife and they talk to me about it, like, hey, how do you, you know, feel about being here? I'm like, oh, you know, it's nice. I get, you know, this, I get to drive, you know, to the store. It doesn't take me, you know, 15, 20 minutes just to go to a store like I did in LA, but they asked me for a reason. And that speaks volume, you know, that speaks volume in letting me know that they are aware of the racism around the state in Iowa, around the town that we live in, and how people perceive me.
So all of this for sure, and you know, an experience like you were describing, getting pulled over with your whole family in the car there. I know that this has brought up some, can't even imagine, you know, how tough the conversations to have with your daughters, the famous Princess P, the, you know, not quite as famous yet, but Freya. And as a side note to this, you know, people, if they haven't seen your daughters on social media, they've got to. You know, I got a lot of friends now who they've got 2, 3, 4, 5-year-old kids, and my nieces and nephews, and basically your daughters have just ruined every other kid for me, in the sense that, you know, so someone's like, oh, look at this great thing that my you know, child just did. And I'm like, well, I would be impressed by that, but I know the Townsend girls, so it's impossible for me to be impressed by any kid anymore.
Thank you.
I love your daughters. They're incredible. But tell me a little bit about the conversations that this has sparked with them.
It's you know, unfortunately there's a ongoing like issue with you know, mixed girls, because they mixed girls or mixed boys, you know, especially coming from both sides, the Black community and the white community, because they're in the middle, right? And ultimately, you know, society makes them choose a side. You know, P, who is 6 years old, about to be 7, is much lighter than Freya. So in society, Freya will be considered more of the Black girl, because she's my skin complexion, to whereas P will be more considered of white because she's light, you know, her mom's side, right? And that's the talk that we're having with them now, is because as P getting older, oh, daddy, you take so long with my hair. How come you don't have to take that long with Freya? It's you know, it's that talk, and it's ingrained in our community because of the difference of, you know, light versus dark. You know, dark, back in the day, dark was considered, you know, the field slave, you know, lesser than, you know, the one who was light-skinned in the house, you know, got all the goods and everything, had the good hair and everything. So there's just a divide. And so we're just kind of talking to them about, like, hey, like, you both are beautiful. You both are Black and you both are white. You know, but society will see you as a Black girl. You know, you will have your troubles of trying to fit into this group and trying to fit into that group, but don't try to fit in. You know, be your own person, you know, and that's why, you know, I train my girls. I train my girls to be brave, strong, and confident, not to just be strong solely physically, but mentally, you know, so that they could, you know, when they grow up and have to experience what we're experiencing, they are already, you know, cemented to handle anything, you know, and it breaks my heart to even have those talks, you know, and it's just hair, you know, but in society is a big thing. You know, how come our hair is, you know, softer than mine? And then people will come up and say, oh, I know this Freya hair is different than P's, you know, and then I got to go ahead and, you know, why is that? And, oh yeah, P's hair is good, but, you know, Freya hair looks different, and it's just, it's constant. You know, it's constant.
Yeah, you know, Marissa has expressed, you know, with her kids being mixed as well, you know, how I think a lot of times her daughter feels like she's not accepted by a lot of the Black kids at school, where she's not Black enough to be Black, but she's not white either. And even
they're when in the middle,
asking about going to like a protest last night, where Marissa sort of cautioned her against that, because it's like, you've got, you know, you're 16 with a white boyfriend, and like, you're going to go there, and you know, that's, it's maybe a dangerous thing for them to be like, well, you know, are they with us or are they against us? You know, it's, right. it's a lot of tense right. stuff going on. And right. your girls are so young, you know, with not even quite 7 years old yet. But I guess whenever I think of Perseus too, she seems so mature, you know, for, and so advanced. Yeah. You know, besides just the athletic advanced stuff, just advanced maturity, emotionally, everything. Is she asking, you know, is she asking a lot of questions about, you know, daddy, why, you know, why did this happen to George Floyd? Why, you know, why are these riots happening? Like, is that something you guys let her see or steal her from, or?
Yeah, she acts, because, you know, I was crying, and Amy was crying, and you know, she acts like, you know, what is wrong? And me as a parent, I never want to shield my kids from the real world, because I was shielded from the real world. You know, my mother never really told me about racism. And, you know, I went to a high school, you know, it was predominantly white, you know, Catholic high school and everything, and, you know, dated white women and everything, and dealt with what came with being a black guy, dating a white girl in all predominantly school. So, but I never had the education or the understanding, because nobody ever, you know, had the time to sit down and tell me. So when she asked us, you know, we told her that somebody did something bad to another person. And we explained the book that she's reading of Ruby. I forgot the little girl name. It's this little black girl that's going through, telling her story, going through integration. And it lays out for kids. Yeah, it's awesome book for kids like P's age to read and to understand. And, you know, she'll tell us about the book, like, hey, mommy, you know, white people didn't like Ruby because, you know, of her skin color, and, you know, they were mean, but then, you know, they came together, and you know, that's what it's like. And I'm Ruby because I'm black and everything. And, you know, she knows a little bit of that, but, you know, she's asking, you know, she's also, you know, blurted out something like 2 weeks ago to where she's like, you know, it's hard to be being a black girl. And it shocked me and Amy. We're like, what you mean? But she wouldn't elaborate on it. She's like, no, it's just hard, you know. And I don't get why she said that or where that's coming from. Maybe she's, you know, like you said, she is very mature for her age, to be 6-7 years old. And for her to express that feeling, it's like, you know, is she feeling, you know, getting into her feelings of being in the first grade, second grade, of dealing with, you know, other kids who don't look like her, or, you know, kids who look like her but much darker? You know, it's she's definitely asking, you know, and you know, I would never want to keep her away from the real world, you know, of what's going on, because at some point she's going to have to face it, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I think if there's anyone who I trust to do a great job with this, because, you know, you're just a phenomenal dad, and I love seeing what you do with those girls. But I'd imagine, you know, did you have a chance to listen to that Marcellus Wiley thing that I sent you? Kind of to that effect of what Marcellus Wiley was talking about, it would seem, you know, that there's this balance to strike between educating your kids about, you know, this is happening, this is something that you need to be aware of, but balancing that with, while you're aware of this, you know, you can't be, you know, kind of assuming that it's going to happen to you this way, or you're accepting of it, or you're going to just say, well, this is happening because I'm black and there's nothing that I can do about that. How do you handle that, or foresee handling that as the girls grow up?
You know, I take it as that, like, you know, at some point you will feel some racial disparity. You know, you will feel some racial discrimination at some point. And that's why I said, you know, we live by three things: brave, strong, and confident. You know, I need you to be brave in your mind. I need you to be brave in your heart to be able to speak up, speak out, call out, and stand up. You know, I need you to be confident, confident in being able to speak up, speak out, call out, and stand up. You know, but also, you know, be strong in it. Stand by your friends, you know, and stand by others, whether if they're white, black, Asian, Puerto Rican, brown, whoever, you know, and it's, you know, it's some things that Marcella said was really good and true, but then, you know, I disagree in a way to where he said that, like, you know, it's not necessarily always going to happen or come at you. That's not everybody's lives. You know, those that live in predominantly white neighborhoods like me, or that's still in a hood, you know, there still will be somebody who feels some type of way of your skin complexion. You know, 56 years ago, you know, segregation ended. We're talking 56 years ago. You know, that's not that long ago. And those people who wanted segregation are still alive. You know, those people who still feel that way are still passing on their racial ideologies onto their kids and then keeping it going. But then it's up to me, you know, and other parents to lead our kids into the future and to create a better one. No matter what, if you're experiencing racial discrimination, bigotry, or racism, whether if you're in school or out in the street or wherever you're at, you know, how are you going to respond to it? Never respond out of hate. You know, it's going to get you mad, you know, but you can't allow it to fester in and keep you mad. You know, we need the next generation and then my kids' generation to come up with a better plan, something, you know, and like I said, it starts with us. You know, if I could keep my kids grounded on being brave, strong, and confident, then I'm pretty sure it'll be a ripple effect onto other people. And then if not just my kids, anybody that I come into contact with at my gym, out in the street, you know, the kids that I train here, anybody that I can impact on social media, it's all about your response. You know, like I said, I've been through so much from my oldest daughter, who is turning 18 this year, you know, from her mom being white and them and her family restricting the relationship from me and her, you know, the school, the high school from me getting a white girl pregnant and them parents calling in to having me expelled and lunch ladies not serving me lunch. But the great thing about that is that it took a white woman who was the head of the lunch the lunch to give me free lunch for a year and a half. You know, how can I let the hate of other people fester in my heart and allow me to reciprocate that towards white people? I can't, because not all white people are racist. They're not. You know, not all white people are willing to listen to their parents if they're trying to pass down that racial ideology. You know, they gotta break away from it. You know, some do and some don't. But it takes us to have this conversation. You know, it takes us to talk. You know, it takes those that want to learn and understand to have compassion and empathy. You know, just one day at a time, one person at a time, it could be a ripple effect. But, you know, it comes down to all how you respond.
And I know that the Townsend family attended a peaceful protest the other evening. Describe that experience to me.
You know, being in Iowa, you know, you would think, you know, that's a lot of white people, maybe like 10% black people there. But when we went to the vigil on Sunday, it was everybody. You know, I was just so amazed by all the white folks that came out. You know, I was amazed by all the black and brown people that came out. People were holding hands, people were hugging, people were crying. You know, that's progress. You know, that's progress. And it kind of strikes me that, like, I automatically went in thinking, like, all right, I'm in Iowa. You know, I'm in a place where it's predominantly white. You know, let's see who's if white people going to come out and support. You know, it shocked me, and it's like, you know what, like when stuff like this happens, you can't close your mind off and think that, you know, there aren't going to be white people that's going to support the cause, because they're tired of it too. You know, nobody wants to be labeled as a racist, just like, you know, blacks don't want to be labeled as a thug, and you know, it goes both ways. But they came out, and everybody, all races, it was awesome, man. And you know, people were crying, people were saying, you know, that could have been my son. You know, people was consoling each other. You know, it came to a point to where I was like, this could be great for the next generation. This could be great, you know. And it felt so good to see that. It felt so good to see everybody coming together.
That's good. Yeah, I'm sure it's been a great frustration to you to see so many of the peaceful protests and the good things that are happening being overshadowed by rioting, looting, all of that stuff. If you know, to give you the megaphone that I can here, if you could, you know, send a message to people who are doing that stuff, what would that be?
If you know, it's happening here in Des Moines. You know, it's, you know, who would think in the middle of America, you know, that the rioting and stuff that happened here. And I would just say, you know, they're taken away from the message. Like I understand what rioting means, and but the looting and everything, and it's taken away from the message. Most importantly, when they're doing this stuff, the rioting and looting and everything, we already know that, you know, the media is against black and brown people. So automatically they're gonna label the rioting and looting to black people. You know, black and brown people, they're already gonna say, look at what they're doing. We already know, you know, it plays into the negative narrative that's already out there about black and brown people. So I would just say, like, if even black folks just speak up, speak out, stand up, just stop it. Just continue on doing what you're doing, you know, hold on to your truth. You know, we already know what the media is gonna play and spin out there. But the riots, you know, it's like Martin Luther King said, right? It's the language of the unheard. You know, we understand where it's coming from. And if people want to know the history behind it, we know that, you know, the black community learned it from our oppressors, right? So, but it doesn't correlate over into the message. You know, the message needs to be in a forefront. The riots and the looting doesn't be in the forefront. And the media they gotta take part into not, you know, perpetuating this crazy violence out there that keeps running and running and running and running. That's the one thing why people have this negative narrative about black and brown people, is because the more that they see violence and stuff on TV that the media is pushing, they automatically gonna say, yep, I knew it, he's a thug, I knew that, I knew this. So it's just, the message just need to be in the forefront, man. And it takes us from social media and our following to keep it there.
Yeah. We'll pause and take a look at what was really happening with a lot of that looting. Like, you know, Santa Monica got torn up, and it's like, well, I'm watching on TV while a bunch of white dudes run out of this store with surfboards under the scooter and ride off with surfboards. And I'm like, well, you know, shit. Like, I can't even imagine. Like, it was so, you know, it was so ridiculous in that sense that it's like, people are going to get mad about Black Lives Matter or these peaceful protests because these stores got broken into, and it's a bunch of fucking surfers with, you know, stealing surfboards and you know, just people being opportunists and ruining, you know, the situation that people are trying to get something positive out of something extremely, extremely negative. Right. So you've been talking about it, but, you know, like, where does change start, and where can people you know, like myself, be like, how can we be effective allies to you? And I know today there's like the Blackout Tuesday thing going on, and you know, it's so hard to know what information is right or real or whatever, because some people are saying, oh, this is, you know, they're trying to silence Black people by doing this, and if you do this hashtag, this happens, and if this hashtag, this happens. So, you know.
Right. So the Blackout Tuesday was just for today, and it's meant for us to pause, you know, post the blackout, but then also put it to action. The action is going out to register to vote, you know, nationally, you know, for you know, I think today is the Iowa caucus and what's going on in Iowa. So to go out and vote, but also vote into your communities, right? And then continue on peacefully protesting, you know, allow your voice to be heard, you know, also go out there and seek legal representation for the protesters who were peacefully protesting and that had got arrested. And if you find it in your heart to be a blessing to somebody, bail them out, bail somebody out, you know, and demand that your voice be heard. And how you could do that is sign the petitions that's going on, you know, that and donate money to the families who are affected by the injustices, like Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery and George Floyd and many others. You know, the guy that died 2 days ago in Louisville, you know, by the cops, you know, it's injustice, you know, donate to his family and stuff. So that you could do that. So that's what Blackout Tuesday is all about. Blackout Tuesday shouldn't just be about, oh, you know, I'm posting it and then, you know, I'm supporting, you know. No, yes, thank you. You're using your voice, but action needs to be had, you know. We can use our voice all we want. We'll be using our voice for the longest, you know, for hundreds of years. But action, and we need action. Secondly, I would say, you know, I had made a post about, you know, how can I help? You know, one, got to educate yourself first. You know, don't be afraid to go to YouTube, go to Google, look up authors and speakers like Tim Wise, Jane Elliott, Michael Eric Dyson, Cornel West, Frederick Douglass. You know, they have great books. My wife is reading a book about white supremacy and how she could overcome it and acknowledge it. It's by Layla F. Saad. That's a good book to read, you know, and educating yourself. So when we go ahead and have these conversations, you know, you're understanding what I'm saying. You know, ask the questions, you know, just like you said, how can I help? You know, speak up, speak out. Silence is right now. And I think that this is huge. Silence is calling out those who have been silent. And letting them know, like, hey, your silence is making you a part of the problem. You know, I always felt like that if I have a white friend and they see me as their friend, but an issue like this is going on and they don't speak about it, then that's letting me know, like, wow, you support, you know, what happened and you look at me differently. You know, it's the same way of, you know, having a white friend and a white friend having a black friend, but that white friend knows no people who are racist and are heavily racist, and they're still friends with them, but don't speak out against them, don't speak up against them, don't call them out. You know, it's like, how can I be safe and secure in our friendship if you're allowing yourself to be friends with bigots and racists? You know, it's about being a good person and just standing up for everybody, you know, not just standing up for Black people, but brown, but the Native Americans, for Asians, you know, for whites as well, you know, because regardless, my wife got pushed back, you know, she got pushed back from her own friends. She lost friends, you know, those who are white that look to stand up for Black and brown people, you will get pushed back. But that's okay, because you're standing by your truth. You're standing by your convictions, and that's okay. They don't need to be your friends anyway. You know, sometimes you got to call out your family too, you know?
Well, thank you, James. You had mentioned to me the other day about the Advancement Project by Jesse Williams.
Yes.
So there's going to be incoming donations from myself, from Juggernaut Training Systems, to that. So if people want to check that out at advancementproject.org, they can do that. Anything else you want to add, buddy?
I would just say, you know, everybody, you know, what's been happening, you know, I know, you know, me, I'm a big believer in Jesus, and, you know, I always say Jesus is greater than religion, you know, so it's all about our relationship, but everything happens for a reason, and I believe George's death is allowing us to see that reason, and that reason is we're all coming together, you know, we're trying to move past the negative narrative of that blacks can only be with blacks and whites can only be with whites. No, we need to be together. The only way we can get past this is if we all come together, you know, out of love, out of compassion, out of empathy, and just, you know, just create a better future for the next generation, for our kids. We all got little ones, and, you know, they need a better future. They need the leaders. They need to be led by the leaders, which is us. You know, we need to do better by them. And, you know, the day that God calls us home, hopefully, you know, we did our part, and their society and their future and their world is safe, you know, and we could go in peace.
James, thank you. Everybody, send my love to Amy, to the girls. Thinking about you out here, praying for you guys. So have a good one, my man.
Thank you, man.
All right. Take care, buddy.
All right.